I'm Captain Kevin Smith, and this is Throttle Up, a radio show and podcast dedicated to the proposition that critical thinking, when employed, can dramatically improve performance in whatever we are doing, enable us to solve problems that others avoid, equip us to become thought leaders instead of followers, and provide us with the intellectual resources and moral courage to support and defend America and its Constitution. Our motto is clarify, reason, win. That is, clarify the actual, employ analytic reason, and achieve mission success. Our website, throttleupradio.com, that has all kinds of information. Also, our podcast is located there, as well as iTunes. And of course, we have a blog, so please visit our website. Our support staff, Evergroove Studios for audio engineering services. They are located in Evergreen, Colorado, and Reflections Printing for multimedia support, and they are located in St. George, Utah. Our book is Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook. It is available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. Our broadcast time on Red State Talk Radio, we are on the weekends, both Saturday and Sunday, on the main channel, that's at 7 p.m., and the Encore channel, that's at 6 p.m. Okay, welcome back to another Throttle Up radio show and podcast. And of course, it should be fairly common knowledge that this is a radio show on Red State Talk Radio, and we are on the weekends, both Saturdays and Sundays, on both channels. And so we are very honored to have that position on this great radio station. Also, we have a podcast, and the podcast can be found on iTunes. You can find it on our website, which is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com, all one word. And you can access, well, there, yeah, you can access all the podcasts that we have done. There are actually quite a few. And of course, we do special series, and those are, well, we hope they're of particular interest to certain segments of the listening audience. We try to be interesting, up to date, and current, and so that's what we try to do. But we are, we strive to be, and I actually believe we are different from most radio shows. You can get a lot of information from many, many radio shows out there that basically talk politics, political speak, or however you want to define it, the current political situation of the day, what have you, and that's fine, and you can do your own searching. This is not particularly, this show is, does not fall into that category. Now, having said that, we will certainly address ourselves to current events that we think are particularly important. We will address ourselves to developments either nationally or internationally. We try to do that as well, but we try to look at it from a different perspective. We try to delve a little bit deeper into it without getting boring or overly pandemic. And so that's where we are today. This is a show for the 16th of January, and the nation is in the midst of a major political crisis that has occurred. Many of you, like me, consider this to be quite unfortunate and I would say disturbing. There is a lot of anger. There's a lot of hostility. There is also a serious attempt afoot to restrict information. There is a very, very serious attempt to censor sources, whether those sources are individuals or whether they are groups or whether they are defined media sources like stations, like YouTube channels, like articles, papers, you name it. And that's profoundly disturbing in my view. And I believe in the view of most Americans that here we have a country that was founded on individual freedom, was founded on this whole concept of liberty. And now we are no longer expected to gather information freely, sift through it, and figure out on our own what is valid, what is truthful, what is factual, what is appropriate, what is something that can provide us with the means to enjoy productive work, to enjoy prosperity, to enjoy the blessings of freedom. And that was, until recently, that was left up to the individual. Until recently, that was left up to the individual believing in the goodness of the American people, believing in the intelligence of the American people, believing that we are living in a modern industrial world. People are literate. People are educated. People are capable, performing things that bring lasting positive results. People are capable of building things that are useful, designing things, constructing things, creating things, especially in the area of innovation and creativity. The American people are, in fact, a people with creative spirits. And so here we have a situation in which that's no longer considered to be true. That's no longer considered to be appropriate, viable. That's no longer considered to be the case. The American people are not smart enough to do this on their own. They have to be managed. The information that the citizens receive in this particular country has to be managed and curated before it is given. And so the selection, the management, the curation of information that is coming into us from various informational sources has already been determined to be something that we ought to know by others. So others have taken on the responsibility of managing what I call our mind space. Now, this show is about the mind space. This show is, in fact, going to be talking about the individual mind space. All right. So let me give you a little bit of, bear with me for a second here, and let me give you a little bit of build up and definition of what I'm talking about. Now, mind space is, in fact, a fairly new thing. It's a new idea. Not entirely new, but fairly new. All right. So we talk about spaces. We talk about conceptual stuff. We talk about conceptual structures. We talk about mental models. Mental models is a very, very close thing in terms of its idea to a mind space. A mind space is the thoughts that occupy our particular consciousness. What do we believe? And so I like to say that what is our belief and value system? And it needs to be defined. It's not random. It is a something that we possess that is part of our consciousness, that is part of our conscious awareness, that is part of our, another way of saying that, is part of our cognitive system, our belief and value system. And that whole thing is contained within a conceptual arena, if you will. This conceptual arena is, it's useful to consider this conceptual arena as being the mind space, or you can personalize it. You can say, occupies my mind space, and do an audit. In fact, that ought to be done on a regular basis, just like we audit our finances, and we do audits and investigations and inventories and stuff in terms of all kinds of things. We ought to be looking at our mind space as well. We ought to be looking at it from the standpoint of, all right, what are the things that I believe in? What are the things that I use? How do I think? How do I think about in general, and then how do I think in terms of broad categories? So with respect to the way humans have organized themselves, we can call it the socioeconomic system of this country, of the United States. How do I think about that in terms of its ability to be beneficial and its ability to provide us with freedom and prosperity for all? Okay, how is that? How is that functioning? And then do I believe in that as a major objective or not? You say, no, I don't believe in that. I believe that I should get as much as I can for myself and let others do the same thing. Okay. And so we go from there. I would say that as Americans, we want prosperity not for the privileged elite, but we want prosperity for everyone. We want this to be a level playing field. We want this place to have equal opportunities completely across the socioeconomic spectrum for all individuals, for everyone. And so that's an example of what I'm trying to talk about. Now, what is it that occupies our mind space? What is it? Currently, and here I think we're getting to a point where we are encountering a big test, all right? Something out there is testing our consciousness. Something is testing our situation awareness. Now, in my profession, as an aviator for a very long period of time, we often use the term situation awareness. Situation awareness was vital for mission success. Had to maintain it, and it was not always easy to do. But situation awareness is that what is actually happening in terms of its, we had to be very clear in our understanding. We had to have clarity of the actual. We had to be able to clarify what was actually happening, not what we wanted to happen or and other kinds of cognitive bias. We struggled on a regular basis, and we demanded of ourselves that we would not do anything that imposed cognitive bias on ourselves or on others. And that's how we were able to be successful in this very demanding environment. Right now, that's what we're faced with as citizens of this country, as well as the world, but mostly citizens of the United States. The United States is now experiencing a period of crisis. We are now embroiled in a socioeconomic, political crisis of severe magnitude. There are indications. In many cases, there are very, very strong indications that the current presidential election was riddled with fraudulent activities. Was, in a sense, the current presidential election was stolen. There are very, very strong indications. So there's very serious attempts here going on that might have a lasting negative impact on this country. And of course, we have this, it's almost ubiquitous now. It's almost across the board. We have this massive effort going on right now in terms of censorship. We have whole platforms being taken down. We have individuals that are being censored on a regular basis. We have all kinds of stuff going on in which information is not allowed to flow freely across the information spectrum. We have what we call big tech, these large informational providers and informational platforms that are censoring or providing us with only information that they want us to know, and not providing us with alternative views or providing us with the full picture. They do not want us to have the full picture. Now, really, it doesn't, you know, if we just step back from it for a moment and ask ourselves, okay, and, you know, with respect to that, in terms of a concept, all right, or let's employ what I call higher order reasoning here. In terms of a concept, with respect to that, is it even justifiable in any way for information to be managed by others and not by oneself? Who gets to be in that position where they have assumed the authority that the information that comes to me from the world, if you will, from my worldly environment, the information that comes to me has first got to be managed and approved. So there is an approval process before the information gets to my eyes and ears. Who gets to do that approval process, and what is the justification for it? How does one justify that curation of information? In other words, who owns my mind space? Is my mind space my own, or are other people allowed to occupy, or are other people allowed to pre-select that which occupies my mind space? If we think it's okay for others to pre-select that which occupies my mind space, then we are followers. We are not thought leaders. We have agreed beforehand that whatever you say, I will believe, because it's just easier for me. And besides that, if I don't go along with what you want me to believe in, then I might suffer, because you may very well have threatened me, and I'm not willing to put myself at risk or put my family at risk. And so I will go along with what you want me to say, or I will go along with what you want me to believe. Okay. If that's how you think, if that's what you allow to occupy your mind space, then I guess I could say that this radio show is not going to be of much use, because this radio show is about taking control of your mind space, assuming control over it, declaring it to be sovereign territory. You shall not enter my mind space with disinformation. You shall not enter my mind space with false information. You shall not enter my mind space with lies. I will reject those lies. I will reject those hollow promises. I will not believe in what you are trying to get me to believe. I simply will not believe it. I am going to determine for myself what I believe to be true, what I believe to be false, what I believe to be correct, accurate, what I believe to be incorrect, what I believe to be harmful. And I will even go on to say that what I believe has got to be consistent with my belief and value as a child of God, my belief that I am in fact part of God's plan, and God has a place in my life, and I believe in that, because that is part of my being. And so those who want me not to believe in that, or try to invade my mind space with alternative views, I may listen to that, of course, and I'm free to do that, but I will reject those ideas, because I do not believe that that is something that humans are made for. What is the purpose of our creation? What is the purpose of our creation? Were we created on purpose, or what, are we just a product of some kind of spontaneous generation? What is the purpose of our lives, and the individual life? Is my individual life meaningful? What is the purpose of my life, and do I engage in purposeful activities that brings benefit to myself and others? Do I do that? And that is part of what, that is the belief side, if you will, of this belief and value system, or the things that occupy my mind space, and I keep them there. And I will reject those things that are not productive. I will reject those things that I consider to be inappropriate or wrong or even evil. I will reject those things. They're not part of who I am. And so who I am and who you are depends in large measure about what occupies our mind space, what I allow in to my mind space, and what I allow in there to reside, what I give permanent status to. This idea that I have, is it given permanent status? Is it embraced? Does it continuously reside within my mind space? And then there's a whole bunch of things that we are not going to allow in. We may recognize who and what they are at the doorway, but they will not gain access into our mind space. Only we can give access. Now, we can, of course, turn over the keys to the door to somebody else, and we can say, I will allow you to permit access into what occupies my mind space. I will relinquish my sovereign right to others. There is a concerted effort right now underway to give over our sovereignty as thinking human beings, give that over to others and allow them to occupy, or allow them to select that which occupies our mind space. All right. So let me take a short break and we will be right back with some audio clips.
Rule one is stand up straight with your shoulders back, and it's about a general attitude towards life. So hierarchies are very stable features of life in general, and certainly of human life. And wherever you have any system of values, you have a hierarchy, because a system of values implies that one thing is better than another. If you have a situation where one thing is better than another, then some people are better at doing it than others, and you get a hierarchy. To stand up straight with your shoulders back is a literal injunction, but also a metaphorical injunction, because what you do when you stand up like that is you kind of expose the vulnerable surfaces of your body. It's an act of courage. It's an act of taking on the voluntary responsibility of contending with hierarchical organization and uncertainty. And it's a good physical manifestation of the moral courage that's necessary to live life properly. And it's something that leaders naturally embody. And that's true not only of human beings, by the way, it's also true of animals all the way down the biological chain. So the more successful creatures, let's say, are also those who comport themselves in an upright manner. And, you know, even in our common language, to be upright is not only something that we think about physically, but also morally, right? To be an upright person is to tell the truth and to act forthrightly and to do what you say you're going to do and all of those things. So that's all of a piece. And so that's rule one. Rule two, which is treat yourself like you're someone responsible for helping, that's an extension of rule one in some sense. The idea would be that, you know, people are often ashamed and embarrassed and anxious because of their insufficiencies and failures and the incomplete nature of their characters and all the things they don't know and all of that. And so it's useful to develop and practice an ethic of detached self-regard. Like, it's not narcissism. It's not self-esteem. It's not grandiosity. It's none of that. It's just the clear realization that as other people have value and as it's necessary to treat them that way, if you want anything in your relationships whatsoever to go right, so it's also necessary to develop that attitude towards yourself, despite the knowledge you have of all your inadequacies. And that's a really good thing to practice, because it requires practice, both the detachment and then that ethic of care. So, and then you want to act in accordance with your highest values. Now, that means you have to figure out what those values are. If you act in accordance with your highest values, sometimes that makes your day-to-day operations difficult, because you have to confront unpleasant truths. You have to discuss things that you'd rather avoid. It would be easier to act to decrease conflict in the moment. But it's a very bad medium to long-term strategy. You have to engage in a certain amount of conflict moment to moment if you're going to say and do the things that are necessary in order to set things right in the medium to long term and for an increasingly large number of people. And that's also another guide to leadership, I would say. You need a broad-scale vision. You have to know what it is that you're doing with your life, let's say, generally speaking, but more particularly in the next 3 to 5 years. What do you want? What do you want from your friends, your family, your intimate relationships, your employment, your education, your care of your mental and physical health, your response to temptations like drug and alcohol use? If you could have what you wanted, if you could lay your life out properly, how would you be functioning across those 7 dimensions? Why would that work for you? Why would it work for your family? And why would it work for the broader community? Then that gives you a reason. And if you have a reason that's well thought through, that you find compelling, so that's a compelling story, let's say, the kind of compelling story a leader might tell, then that will provide you with motivation to do the things that are difficult that you need to do. So that's positive emotion, that motivation. It's a neurochemical system that runs on the chemical dopamine. It's the neurochemical system that underlies people's willingness to undertake something voluntarily. So we experience most positive emotion in relationship to a goal. And what that means is if you don't have a goal, then you don't have any motivation. And so what that means is you better have your goals well delineated, because that way you'll be maximally motivated. Now, the additional advantage to that is that if you have your goals delineated and they're compelling goals for you, it also makes you less anxious and uncertain and stressed, because your pathway forward into the future is mapped, and that makes it more certain. And uncertainty causes stress and physiological load. Okay, so you want to have your large-scale vision. You want to have it thought out on a 3 to 5 year basis. You want to have it cover those 7 or so dimensions that we already described. You want to see why it's relevant to you and your family and the broader community. You want to break that down into your monthly, weekly, and daily practices. And if they can be routinized, then so much the better. And then that becomes built into you. So what happens neurologically is that when you do something new, you use almost your whole brain. That's a good way of thinking about it, particularly the right side of it, the right hemisphere. And as you practice something, the amount of your brain you use gets smaller and smaller and moves leftward until you basically build a effective little machine at the back that takes care of it automatically. Routinizing things decreases the cognitive and physiological load. It's a big deal. And if you routinize good habits, then they become part of your character and part of what people come to expect of you. To be precise in your speech does 2 things. It specifies your goal, and it reduces uncertainty. You see what you aim at. And I don't mean that metaphorically. I really don't, because you're a lot more blind than you think. There's a lot of the world that you don't see. You see most of what's in front of you in a very blurry way, like your peripheral vision is extremely low resolution. You see clearly a tiny focal area that's where you're pointing your eyes. And you point your eyes at what you want to pay attention to. And what you want to pay attention to is generally associated with what you want. So what that means is that the world reveals itself to you in relationship to what you want. And so that's really helpful, because you want to see the world so you don't stumble blindly through it and fall into a pit. You want to get to where you're going. And so if you specify where you're going very clearly, then that enables you to see the pathway forward. Now, The upside to that is that you can probably get to where you want to go. The downside is you also make your conditions of failure very explicit. And that's hard on people in the short term. You know, it's easy to delude yourself and to leave everything vague because then you can't tell when you're failing. But that doesn't stop you from failing. It just stops you from seeing it while it's happening. Then the other advantage to being precise in your speech and your aims is that that helps you tell the difference between what's important and what isn't important. And you want almost everything to be not important. You know, in times of crisis in your life, everything becomes important. So imagine that you have a new physical symptom that's distressing and you don't understand it. So then you're thinking, oh my God, what's happening? Am I collapsing physically? Have I got a serious illness? Is it a fatal illness? What's going to happen to my family? Is my whole life going to fall apart? Like, what happens when something that you can't specify occurs is that everything becomes relevant? And that's terrible. No one ever wants that. You want hardly anything to be relevant. And so if you specify your goal, then almost everything becomes irrelevant. And only those things that are important stand up in sharp relief. That's also a real boon to the people that you're communicating with because they know what you want then. And so they, even if you're a harsh person, let's say that you're pretty punitive and if people don't do a good job, you let them know. If you specify what you want, then they know how to avoid your harshness. And the more precise you are in your formulation of the problem and in your presentation of a solution and the role you might play in that solution, the more likely you are to advance on all fronts. As far as I can tell, there's nothing you can do that moves you and your agenda, your vision, let's say, forward faster than precision in speech.
Okay, well, it's always good to hear from Jordan Peterson. He's got some rather fascinating things that he talks about, and I enjoy listening to him and reading his books. I'm going to plan to get his new book coming out shortly. I have read his previous book, 12 Rules of Life. Okay, now, he's talking about, taking charge. Stand up with your shoulders back. Okay, face the world, not in a downcast way, not in a weak way, but in a strong, purposeful way. And one of the ways we can do this is to recognize that we have control over our mind space, to declare our mind space to be sovereign territory. And you cannot, it's just like the borders of a country. You cannot invade my mind space. You cannot occupy my mind space unless I give you permission, and I'm not going to turn that permission over to anyone else because I am a sovereign being. So the big question here for all of us is do I consider my mind space to be sovereign territory where I am in control? And the big decision here in terms of how to decide is yes or no. It's a simple, it's a binary decision. So in terms of the decision tree, I guess you could say that there may be more than two branches, but we'll keep it fairly simple. We'll just say the decision point is yes, I am in control. I am in control of my sovereign, not mind space. Or no, I don't want to be. That's just too hard on me. I'm going to allow others to put ideas into my mind space and take other ideas out. I'm going to turn that control, turn that responsibility over to others. Okay, so that's the key decision that we are facing right now. Now, here I'm going to delve right into this thing because this is particularly important as we go forward this day in history. One of the rules of critical thinking is this, and I have it in my documents that I have, and you can access this on my website. It's a brochure. It's called Critical Thinking and Complex Problem Solving Superhighway. When you and those around you are confused, seek higher ground. Okay, right now we are living in a confused environment, to say the least. And what I'm talking about here is consider higher levels of abstraction. That's what I mean by seeking higher ground. Higher levels of abstraction to overcome the confusion that is caused by doubt, by complexity, by uncertainty, and any number of other things. We are in a position here, or we find ourselves, as we find ourselves today, in this situation in which a whole bunch of things are happening. A whole bunch of things are happening all around us. We are really confused. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how to deal with these strange events. And we just don't know how to make sense out of what is going on because we're getting all kinds of conflicting information. Now, conflicting information is not all that unusual in the giant scheme of things. And we have got to figure out how to deal with it and how to sift through that which is accurate and how to sift through that which is inaccurate, how to make that distinction and to discard those ideas, discard those thoughts, if you will, discard those beliefs that are judged by us, by oneself, to be inaccurate, not viable, and not useful. All right, so let me give you an example of what's going on right now. Now, I have in my encounters, I guess a little bit surprised at what I'm seeing here in terms of the ability to make sense and make connections out of what is currently going on. Let me frame this last segment here this way. Okay. If we look at what has occurred over roughly the last year, if we look at what has occurred, okay, a lot has happened, not least of which is this COVID-19 worldwide pandemic. A lot has happened. And we have had national elections for president during this time. We have had decisive elections for senators at this time, and so forth and so on. And so we have had economic upheaval. We have had the economy taking a severe hit. Not only do we have a serious medical emergency, but we also have a serious economic emergency that we're dealing with. And then we have this thing all on top of it that is a troubling situation surrounding these recent elections. A situation is very, very disturbing. It does not give anyone justification for being content. There is a lot of serious stuff going on. There's a lot of things emerging. We can say that it's conspiracy theory, or we can say that there really isn't any such thing as conspiracy theory. There is such a thing as making sense out of situations because we are able to put two and two together. Okay, we are able to make connections. We are able to connect the dots. Now, I have heard from other credible sources. The following ideas, but I have also had these ideas myself, okay? And the idea is this, all right? First and foremost, was COVID-19 an accident? COVID-19 was claimed to have originated in Wuhan, China, at a biological laboratory. It was also claimed not to have originated in a biological laboratory, but to have originated in a food market. There are two conflicting claims, okay? But in each case, the claim was that this biological agent, this virus, was released and put on the human stage accidentally. That's the first thing. All right. Now, as critical thinkers, with respect to that piece of information, healthy skepticism is, in fact, the order of the day here. So, the first order of business here for critical thinkers is it plausible that it was just an accident, or was it more likely that it was intentional? Now, the cover-up and the way it was handled would leave one to believe, or would help one to formulate at least a tentative belief that this thing was, in fact, intentional. And why would this laboratory be even engaged in such a biologically toxic experiment anyway? For what purpose would you want to combine biological agents to produce a virus that could spread all across the world? So that's the first question that would come to mind. The second one would be, was the release intentional or was it accidental? All right, and we can take both tracks and see how they play out. What else has happened? All right, so here we have, during a presidential year in the United States, we have a biological agent that has, among other places, has invaded this country, and people are getting sick. People are also dying of the disease. There's a major health crisis afoot, and so forth and so on. And that has a direct effect, a meaningful effect on how this upcoming presidential election is going to occur and be carried out. There was some attempts to try to delay it, but that doesn't work. So we held our presidential elections on the regularly scheduled date, under knowing full well that this pandemic was occurring as well. And we activated in a big way a absentee ballot voting system that had never been perfected to the point in which the reliability of such system was achievable and achieved acceptable results, which were something in the accuracy of greater than 99%. We were never able to achieve that at any time in our history, and yet we used such a system that was determined by formal studies to be rather inaccurate and in some cases profoundly inaccurate. Okay, so we have the Wuhan virus, we have a biological weapon, and then we have a voting system, a digital voting system that was producing results that turned out to be unexplainable, bizarre, and the results across the board were all biased in one direction. In other words, there was not, this was not a random fault within this mega voting system. The faults occurred, and the results of the faults, if in fact we want to consider them to be fault, the faults, the results were that everything was biased in one direction. So very, very suspicious. But notwithstanding the fact that we had two presidential candidates out there. One was campaigning and one was not. The one that was not campaigning won the election against the one who was campaigning. And none of that made any sense to any thinking person. All right, so we have a voting system that was very suspicious. Now, was the voting system influenced by a cyber attack? Okay, so we have very possibly a biological weapon that was launched against the United States. We have a cyber warfare weapon that was launched against the United States. And then on top of that, we have extreme censorship measures being enacted that are entirely illegal, that have no basis in any law, no basis in any law that I'm aware of, and they are a clear violation of the constitutional rights that we have been given. Each of us has a constitutional right, freedom of speech. You cannot stop that. And yet there is a whole move afoot to deny people that right. Okay, so we have three things going on. And is each one going on independently? Or, in fact, is this being orchestrated and coordinated by somebody, some group, some nefarious organization? And what is more likely? Okay, so put this conspiracy theory stuff aside, all right? Let's not even consider those terms because that's a pejorative term. Let's just say that, okay, we are critical thinkers, and does all of this stuff fit into a big picture that we could construct that would give us a better understanding of the situation? So situation awareness in terms of the big picture. Now, we have done a lot of work in the area of big picture thinking. That's a series that I would recommend for anybody listening. But what is the big picture here? And I don't see that happening in a lot of places, a lot of things that I'm looking at. But somebody needs to create the big picture. I have given you an example of how you can create the big picture for yourself and use it to effectively understand what's going on and to determine what you should do as a thinking, sovereign individual. Looks like I'm out of time, and I will see you all next week. Well, that went fast. So this is a close of another show, another Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.